Now, friends and neighbors, we've got another guest with us on our Sunday at Noon show. This time it's Barney Hamilton. And Barney is not his proper name, really. We're going to ask him about that. But anyway, Barney, or whatever his name is, has retired after 45 years' service with INCO, and he is 71 years old. Hello, Barney. Just to get things straight, what is your right name?
My name is Leonard Earl Hamilton.
How come you got called Barney?
Well, I was called Barney because I ran around the butcher's truck. I used to run all over town. I used to steer their old car with my feet, and sit on the back of the seat, and Barney Oldfield was a big guy in those days, and I got called Barney Oldfield.
Marvelous, Barney. I'm going to ask you about that job as a butcher a little bit later in the interview, but in the meantime, I want to know something about yourself now, or about your parents, maybe, just to get it sort of established. Well, where's your father from?
Pembroke.
And tell us something about his early years.
Well, my father, in his early years, he worked on the farm, and then he started butchering, which he had learned by doing the killing on the farm, and started the butcher shop in Pembroke.
All right, what happened after that?
After that, he moved to Chapel and opened a butcher shop up there.
Okay, and from there?
From there he came to Coppercliff and started to work with the carpenters, and eventually ended up a carpenter foreman.
Now, one other point we better get straight, Barney or Leonard, whichever it is. Are you an Irishman or are you a Scotchman, or just where do you fit into this ethnic bit here?
I must be Irish because my grandfather on my father's side was born in the County Cork, and both my grandparents on my mother's side are born in the County Antrim.
Now, I believe that one of your ancestors had some explanation for you having a Scotch name but being from Ireland. Now, what was that?
Oh, yeah, I used to say, I always argue with my father that Hamilton was a Scotch name. He said, never. He said, that was, there were Scotchmen in there, and when they drove out the snakes, they drove the rest of them out with them.
We've got a lot of Scotchmen coming on this show here, and I think we're going to get that rebutted on a future show, Barney. Yeah. Now, another thing you were telling us, talking about before we went on the air, was about your great-grandfather and how he worked with timber and whatnot way back, about 1838 or thereabouts.
That's right. My great-grandfather logged up north. I might say there was two other people in with him. Was a Hennessy from Renfrew and a Moffat from Pembroke. They worked together and they took logs out and floated them down the river, and I've been told by old people from there that the first hewn timber that came down the Ottawa River that went to England was brought down by my great-grandfather.
Now, Barney, we've got to get you to Coppercliff, where you were born, and then what year?
I was born in 1902, and I was born in the place up behind the oxygen plant, what they call Crow's Nest.
Does this still exist now, or...?
They don't call it that anymore, but that's... Older people know that they called it Crow's Nest.
Seems to me, Barney, that you have a recollection when you were about 4 years old, which would take us back to around 1906, of a trip from Coppercliff to Sudbury. Now, first of all, will you give us a little background on what Coppercliff and Sudbury were like in those days and about that trip?
Well, Coppercliff was strictly a mining town. The main part of the town wasn't there. And that was the lower part, as we come out of Coppercliff, was chiefly along with up across the track. And my mother was going to Sudbury one day, and I coaxed her to take me with her, and the only means of transportation that time was by stage, and Burnett ran a stage from Coppercliff to Sudbury, and I was fascinated when I got in the bus because there was a correct heater in to keep it warm. It was in the month of April. And as we went along into Sudbury and past the Irish Cemetery, another team of horses came and started to hook on to pull us in through the place in front of Kai's Supply, which was mud right up to their stomachs. And they pulled us down as far as the Nickel Range Hotel, which at that day was called the White House. We got off the bus, and I was very fascinated then again by everybody having rubber boots on. But however, my mother and I walked down past Durham Street, the other side of where Woolworth store is today, to the store where Aaron Silverman ran his first store in Sudbury. A little log store was set in there.
Well, now, Mr. Hamilton, let's get you back to these early years. Talk a little bit about your... tell us something about your early days going to school, your public school days in Copper Cliff.
Oh, we used to have a lot of fun. We used to, one of our main things was do, we used to play horseshoes and baseball, and lacrosse was opened up in those days, and we played, it was terrific. We had a championship team in Copper Cliff, Ontario Championship. And we started to play lacrosse later on, and I was about 17, well, I started to play lacrosse. It was revamped in for 2 years there.
Now, do you remember any of your school teachers or your schoolmates going to public school in Copper Cliff?
Yes, I remember Miss Mary McCurr. She was my first teacher I went to school with.
How about some of your schoolmates?
Well, the only one I remember right now is Horace Highland.
And is Mr. Highland still around?
Yes, he lives out beside the end of Long Lake.
I'm going to, was he, were you or he the best student? Now, you're going to hear from him if you don't give the right answer to this.
Oh, well, there's only one thing he could do better than me. He could talk Finn, because he played with the Finn boys all the time.
He could talk Finn? Well, that is an accomplishment,
yeah.
Well, if he tells us, we'll get him on and see, get his view of this thing sometime, maybe, eh? Now, getting back to your father, I think you told me that he started he learned butchering from his father and worked in a variety of places, but when he came to Copper Cliff, he changed his trade, is that right?
That's right. He started to work with the carpenters here at that time.
Can you tell us about some of the early buildings that your father worked on and constructed?
Well, my father, he worked around the smeller first and building plates, doing carpenter work in there, and then eventually he ended up around 1911 when Fruit Mine was put in. He built nearly all the houses were built out there, the original homes in there, and he built houses in Creighton, and he built houses in Crane Hill, and he built houses in Copper Cliff. He always said about the houses in Copper Cliff, the ones on Peter Street, little double houses there, he called those sheep houses. And the one little ones on Nickel Street, 20 by 20, in Nickel Street and Norwright Street, he called them toolboxes.
All right, Barney, as for you, I believe that when you finished school that you went in, not into carpentering, but into butchering, as your father had originally, is that true?
Well, I happened to work for Mr. Wilson in Copper Cliff, got it in the summer holidays to start with. Then I went back, and then I quit again and came back and started to work for him in his butcher shop.
Well, now, what sort of work were you doing?
In the butcher shop?
Yeah.
Well, I delivered for him, and he was away. There was a couple of years away. He was away for some organ, a lodge. I believe it was Knights of Columbus. He was away for doing running around the country, and I ran the butcher shop, and he was away.
Now, wasn't it about this time that you were breaking all the speed limits and all the speed laws and becoming known as Barney Hamilton, is that right?
Yeah, that's about the time. That's about the time. The woman used to get the police and report me to them, you know, and you couldn't go over 36 miles an hour with a truck, even at that, you know, in those days.
Right. But I believe that, oddly enough, like your father, while you started out in the butchering trade, that you got into the electrical end of things. Now, how did that come about?
Well, originally, electrical work fascinated me. When I was about 10 years old, we had our house wired in those days for lights. We used to use Kohler lamps before that. And a man by the name of Giles did the job, and I helped him. I helped him run all the wire through the knob and tube, the way it was wired in those days. I'd pull all the wires with him from one end, and he'd pull the other end.
And for this, you developed an interest that remained with you through your life, is that right?
That's right, and it's a very funny thing. I never applied to get a job in the electrical department, but I was very mechanically inclined. I used to overhaul the butcher's, Wilson's truck and our own Ford car, and a fellow by the name of Heppenstall. He came over one day and smelled when I got a job first, and he said, how about coming to the electrical department?
Well, that's the way lives sometimes affected by things as small as that, eh?
Yeah.
Barney, you showed an interest in cars. I know that you still have an interest in cars. Tell us something about the early Ford that I think your father first had in around 1917. How you got it started in winter and something about it.
Oh, the early Ford, 1917, you know. My father couldn't drive very well. My mother could at those days, and they were getting older. He used to run over every little bump was on the road. So he'd take me out, and I was 15, and I would drive for him. And then I...
What were some of the other cars you bought by? I'm talking 17, 18, or 19. Were they always Fords?
Oh, yeah, there were Fords. And when the Ford wouldn't start in the wintertime, we'd jack up the wheel, the hind wheel, and put the car in gear and let it go and wind it up there, and it would help us start it by the wheel, the momentum of the wheel.
All right, Barney, now we're looking at the 1920s, and I'd like to know a little bit more about what it was growing up in Coppercliff in the early 20s. What was sports, dances, entertainment? Tell us something about that.
Well, the main sport in Coppercliff in 1920 was baseball. The Nickel Belt League was one of the greatest things that we ever had there. Creighton had a team, and Froude had ten. No, Froude didn't exist. Sudbury had a team, and Coniston the odd year had teams, and it was terrific. We used to get in the playoffs in 1920. That very date, Coppercliff was playing Creighton for the championship of the league, and there were so many people going. The Algorm Eastern Railway came into Coppercliff and took two or three coach loads out to Creighton, and vice versa, brought the Creightons back to Coppercliff to see the ball games in the playoffs.
They're great days for fans, Barney.
Oh, it was. And in those days, the pitching was good, because we had a pitcher in Coppercliff named Al Miller from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. He had 21 strikeouts that day, and another one was Ernie Tate, the pitch for Creighton, had 19 strikeouts in one of those games.
I bet a lot of our listeners remember some of those names,
Barney. Oh, yes, they would. And Ernie Tate was a good pitcher, because he pitched for Canada against the United States in the between the 14-18 war and won and beat him.
I didn't know that this was a sort of an army, a game
right.
Between armies.
That's
that right?
That's right.
Where was this game played?
France.
I had personally never heard about it. That's,
yeah, he told me that himself.
Well, now, I'm thinking also now about... movies, radio would be in at this time. What, did you go to the movies much?
Yes, we went to the movies pretty steady, you know, a couple of days a week and one of them was, Fibber McGee and Molly was one of my favorites in those days. Hear the dishes roll down. Oh, this is,
That's radio.
Radio, yeah.
That came a little later, I think, but, the cupboard opened up, when he opened up her cupboard.
That's right. The Million Dollar Mystery was one of the ones, a serial show that I used to go to quite regular.
What was it all about? I never heard of it.
Oh, gee, I couldn't tell you. That was not right now.
Sally, what theater did the Million Dollar Mystery show at?
It was in the Grand Opera House, which is now the Empire Theater has been built there.
Well, now, Barney, we're getting on through the 20s, late 20s, into the 30s and so on. At what point did you meet Mrs. Hamilton?
Oh, I met her.
And where?
I met her in school.
Was going to school in Coppercliff?
Right, that's right. She was going to school in Coppercliff.
Well, was she a native of Coppercliff?
No, she wasn't. She was born in St. Louis, Missouri, and moved to Texas, and then to Waterloo, Ontario, then Toronto, then to Coppercliff.
Well, that's an interesting sort of itinerary. How did all that come about?
Well, she went to Texas, first of all, because her uncle talked her father into going down there. There was some country opening up there, and I don't think it materialized as well as it should have. And then he came back up and worked for the Dickey Construction Company. He was one of the foremen there. that built the Coppercliff Club in Coppercliff, and also put addition on to the house of the present house that's used by the president in Coppercliff.
Well, now, that's interesting. He built the addition on that's there now, eh?
That's right.
Well, now, did he not... was it he who took some other work in Coppercliff later?
Oh, my father, my wife's father, when he was finished working there for Dickey Construction Company, well, he was going to go away at the time, but I think it was John L. Agnew who was the president, talked him into taking the job of steward at the Coppercliff Club.
Interesting. How long was he there?
Well, he was there from 1916. I worked as steward until, I couldn't just tell you, I think about 1933.
Barney, that's a long span, and there'll be a lot of people who will remember him, too.
Oh,
no
yes.
Question about that.
A lot of people remember him, older people.
But now, getting back to yourself, when were you married?
I was married in 1929.
Now, sometimes we like to associate a little music or something back with, you must have taken your wife dancing at that time, or probably listened to the radio. What were some of the songs and entertainers of that era that you remember?
5'2", Eyes of Blue, Margie, and Paul Whiteman was on the radio in those days.
Now, Barney? As in Barney Oldfield, do you mind telling us something about what family you have and where they are now and what they're doing now?
Well, we had two girls, and they both trained for nurses at Women's College Hospital in Toronto. And my oldest daughter came back to Coppercliff to work, worked in the hospital for a while, and then she went to moved down to Port Colborne, and she worked down there as a nurse, and she also had charge of the head nurse in their hospital there for a while. And then she came back to Coppercliff again, and at present time she does some part-time administration work at the hospital. My youngest daughter, she graduated and came to Sudbury and got a position in the Memorial Hospital operating room, and then she went away again and took a couple of courses and ended up by being a head in the Mississauga Hospital as head of all operations.
Barney, that's very interesting. The children have done well, and then now about your wife. What are her hobbies? What does she sort of? What's her spare time occupations?
Well, my wife doesn't have any spare time. She's either working for the church. She's cutting down quite a bit now because she's getting older, but the Memorial Hospital is one of her babies. She has pins there all over. She can put across her chest for hospital work, I know. And the church was a great place for her. She was always mixed up in church work or anything that was around the municipality that was needed. Somebody would call her, and she would be very anxious to help them.
Now, Barney, they tell me that all Texans think that everything in Texas is bigger. Now, does your wife fall into that category?
No, she never fell in that, but she always used to have a lot of fun with it. Like, we were down to Texas one year, and my brother-in-law, she sent a postcard to him with a great big rabbit on it and a fellow on his back.
Barney, we're coming towards the end of our time for the interview, but I think that you've done a lot of traveling. Now, tell us some of the places you've traveled by car.
Well, I've traveled Montreal and Toronto to start with. I've traveled to down from the Legazpi down into New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and took the boat across to Yarmouth, to Bar Harbor, and up through the states of Maine and the other two states that I never can think of the name of them, and back home again. We've traveled down to Texas, and we've traveled five times to Florida now, and we've traveled, one of our vacations, we couldn't drive, we went to Hawaii one year, and we've been twice out to British Columbia.
Hello, Barney. For somebody who might be a little younger and thinking about a motor trip in your view, after all these trips, which one did you enjoy the most?
Well, I enjoyed the one out to the West Coast the best. There's only one thing about it. If they had an accordion between the mountains and the Winnipeg, it would be all right.
Barney, for a man who's done this much traveling, have you got a number one rule that you would make to anybody who's thinking of taking a long trip such as the type you described?
Yes, the first thing that I always do is take my car in to be serviced. The steering and everything possible that has to be looked after.
Barney, thank you very much. Friends, our guest today has been Barney Hamilton, retired from Inco after 45 years service at the age of 71, still going strong and still very much a northerner.